This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, greetings again to everybody out there at TFMR. Hey, welcome to a very special podcast where the aim and the goal and the intent is to discuss a very special publication. And by now you've already figured out that it's time to talk about the In Gold We Trust report for 2019. If you have an interest in the precious metals and you've been interested for any length of time, then I'm sure you are familiar with the In Gold We Trust report. When it comes out in May, I like to call it Christmas in May because it's something that is anticipated every year. And you open it up and you can't wait to read it, just like any other gift at Christmas time. The principal author of that report is our buddy Ronnie Strifola. And Ronnie is a managing partner at Incrementum AG in Liechtenstein. And he's been doing that. I think this is now the 13th edition of the In Gold We Trust Report. Like I said, it is widely anticipated every year. And now that it's out, it's great to get a chance to get caught up with Ronnie and pick out a little bit and ask him a few questions. So, Ronnie, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again. Always a great pleasure talking to you.
As we were just joking, Liechtenstein is one of my favorite countries in the world because there's an annual holiday every year where the king buys everybody a beer, something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You could talk to President Trump if he wants to do something similar.
That's true. Yeah. I wonder how that would work. I love it, though. That's just got to be just like a national holiday, right?
It is, yeah. And actually, if you learn more about the Liechtenstein family, about the history and about their views on politics and how to run a country, it's absolutely fascinating. They treat the people like if they were their clients, and they want to deliver good services at reasonable prices for their clients. So it's definitely a great place to be and a great place to do business.
Is it difficult for an American to emigrate there? Because I think I want to go.
I mean, we could ask.
Okay, you might have some pull. You might be one of the most famous Liechtensteinians at this point.
No, but I'm Austrian, yeah.
That's true. I forget. That's true. So you probably don't have much pull. I have to find myself. I just have to get myself a different Liechtensteinian.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, my friend, again, great stuff. The In Gold We Trust 2019 was released a couple weeks ago. It's embedded into this podcast page, at least the compact version, so everybody can scroll through it. And I strongly urge you to do so. If you've been a member of this site, reading this site, you know that for the past several months, going back to the fourth quarter of last year, we've talked a lot about how 2019 is going to unfold a lot like 2010. And one of the core components of that theory is loss of faith, loss of trust, loss of confidence in the central bankers who have kind of been spinning the plates and trying to convince everybody that they've got everything under control and that they know what they're doing for the last 10 years. That plays right into one of the first things I wanted to ask Ronnie about. And that is, I mean, right there early in your report, Ronnie, you talk about the concept of trust and how trust is so important in the Western financial system, but yet now, you know, we're losing trust and losing confidence. I mean, that sounds a lot like what we're writing about here. Tell me how you see it.
When I started writing the first In Gold We Trust report 13 years ago, I was a young analyst sitting in a bank and convinced my boss to write a special report on gold. And I didn't have a clue about the gold market and about the monetary history of gold and Austrian School of Economics and so on. And I had to come up with a good name for the report. And then I said, okay, why not In Gold We Trust? And over the years, I found out that actually gold is it's all about trust. And uh-huh. In the last couple of months, we discussed the leitmotif of the 2019 In Gold We Trust report. And then we said, okay, it seems that trust is crumbling, and trust is crumbling in many areas of our lives. We can see that of course, trust in the media is crumbling. Just have a look at the numbers for all the national TV stations, for the big established newspapers. They are suffering big time, and there were lots of scandals. Over here in Germany, we had the Spiegel scandal, where a very, very well-known journalist basically made up most of his stories. And that's just one example. But we are also seeing, of course, a loss of trust in politics. We are seeing lots of polarization going on all over the globe. So populists on the left and on the right wing of the spectrum, they are winning most of the elections. We are seeing that trust in sports, for example, is crumbling. That trust in democracy is crumbling. We are, for example, quoting a study by Neil Howe. He said that actually millennials, they don't care about democracy anymore, yeah, because for them, democracies are basically dysfunctional, and all they do is borrow from our future, and they don't invest in our future. And he refers to some studies where actually the result was, the later the interviewees were born, the lower their confidence in democratic institutions and the greater their desire for strong leaders. So from my point of view, we are seeing this loss of trust in many, many areas. And the fact that central banks are buying the most gold since the year 1971, the fact that there is a big trend for repatriation of gold, also shows that there is a loss of trust in the international collaboration. When it comes to gold, it seems that, of course, it is a bit the other side of the US dollar. It is the other side of the trust in central banking and how politicians and central bankers actually managed to get out of the crisis, and it seems that still confidence is pretty high. Of course, on the surface, stock markets are doing well. We're in the midst of this everything bubble, where not only stocks but also bonds are trading at all-time highs. You know, we've got $12 trillion of debt in negative territory. We've got the art market that is basically at all-time highs. Real estate all over the world going crazy. So trust in the financial system and also the banking system is pretty high. But the thing when it comes to trust, it is asymmetrical. So it takes many, many years, sometimes decades, to build up that trust, to foster that trust. And then it can only take sometimes seconds or just a few days and the trust is gone. So from my point of view, this monetary U-turn that clearly shows that the emperor has no clothes, and actually sooner or later, I think the market will lose trust in central banks again.
I think you stated it perfectly, and that's exactly the kind of thing that what we've been talking about, is that the central bankers have kind of sold, again, it's about confidence and trust, and they sold us all this bill of goods, you know, that initially the first QE program in 2009 was just a one-off, right? It was, oh no, we're never going to do this again, and Bernanke even went before Congress and actually testified that they weren't monetizing debt when they were buying treasuries directly.
Of course not.
It's like the whole Bill Clinton thing about it depends on what the meaning of is, right? So now they've come to the end of the road. They've kept the plate spinning, you know, and they kept telling everybody that, you know, they'd go back to normal and rates were going back to normal and that they were going to follow quantitative tightening down. And now that's all being reversed. We've seen the impact on the U.S. economy with higher rates and the interest on the national debt on the, you know, at the public scale. Is there any way, do you think, Ronnie, that this is avoidable at this point? I mean, will they somehow manage to keep it together for a couple more years, or are we finally now 10 years on, are they being exposed?
A couple of years, I would doubt that. I mean, if we just compare the current situation to the situation two or three quarters ago. Back then, everybody expected the Fed to raise rates two, perhaps three times in 2019. Now, I mean, it's a given that they will lower rates two or perhaps even three times. They already basically discontinued quantitative tightening. So this clearly shows that Mr. Powell is basically doing the same like Yellen and Bernanke before, and we have seen. I mean, the fourth quarter 2018 was really fantastic to watch, because we have seen that basically every asset class was down. We've seen that stocks had their worst December, their worst performance since the Great Depression, and of course. The Fed stepped in and tried to calm down markets. We had this call from Steve Mnuchin where he called up all the Wall Street banks. And we have seen that now there is a Jay Powell put. Now, I think, you know, at the moment, nobody is really expecting a new round of QE. But when we made the case for this monetary U-turn, everybody was kind of ridiculing us, So, but at the moment, the market is prepared for much more aggressive measures, and we're mentioning a couple of examples in the report. For example, there's several people from the Federal Reserve coming out now. Brainard, for example, the Fed should consider targeting longer rates in a future downturn, so some sort of yield curve control. Trump calls on the Fed to cut rates by 1%. Then Larry Kudlow says they should aggressively lower rates. There is a study coming out by the Federal Reserve San Francisco saying negative rates would have sped up economic recovery, so they are a tool. Then there are many studies coming out saying that quantitative easing did its job. So from my point of view, it's not a question of if, but rather of when new aggressive measures will be taken. And from my point of view, the whole MMT thing, this is something that investors should prepare for. It's going to come, whether we like it or not.
Yeah. Now, the politicians will always look for the easiest way out as well, and that's why they're always going to be in favor of something like MMT2. But Ronnie, I want to double back to the next thing I want to talk to you about, because you kind of touched on it there for a second, and that is the bond market and the yield curve and recession and forcing the central bankers' hands. Tell me what you think of this, because I've been discussing this on the site here now for, I don't know, the last 4, 6, 8 weeks, whatever it's been since the bond market really took off. In fact, the bond market has rallied after every Fed meeting this year, as it seems as if they get further and further behind the curve. The 2-year note at times over the last week or two has been, you know, down to 180. That puts it 60 basis points below the effective federal funds rate. And so to just simply flatten out the curve from overnight to 2 years, or to somehow make it a positive slope again, I've been making the case that Powell is actually about 75 basis points behind the curve, that he actually needs to cut 75 basis points to get that Fed funds rate down to whatever that would be, 165, and create a positive slope again. You point out in your In Gold We Trust this year that the best track record overall for a recession forecast is, in fact, the yield curve. And we've got inverted yield curves all over the planet. Isn't that, in fact, forcing their hands too?
Of course. I mean, we're quoting a study by the San Francisco Fed that clearly shows that inverse yield curves have announced most recessions since the 1950s. And I mean, the logic behind that is pretty clear, because, you know, in anticipation of an economic downturn, investors just reduce the demand for short-term bonds and shift the demand to longer-term bonds. They expect inflation to come down and so on. So, I mean, it's a very obvious thing that interest rate spreads are a very reliable indicator for the economy. But now I think it's interesting. On one hand, there are all those papers coming out of the Federal Reserve, and also by the Federal Reserve, the recession probabilities is showing almost 30% recession risks for April 2020, and in the past 30 years, this figure has never been so high if there was no recession in the following 2 months. But then on the other hand, there's people like Ben Bernanke coming out saying, you know, historically the inversion of the yield curve has been a good sign of economic downturns, but this time it may not. So, of course, this time it's different as always. But from my point of view, first of all, a recession is overdue. We're seeing, I think it's already the longest cycle, the longest uptrend in the history of the United States, or soon it will be. I'm not 100% sure. I think that Donald Trump, with his massive fiscal stimulus, of course, tried to prolong and make this cycle a bit longer. And I mean, compared to the Eurozone, for example, just to give you just to put it in perspective, the whole deficit of the Eurozone in 2018. What would you guess?
Oh my gosh, I can't even come up with a guess. What was it?
It was roughly 80 billion euros. So the total deficit for the whole Eurozone, 80 billion. And you know the numbers from the US, it's yeah, more than 10 times higher. So yeah, of course, he put gasoline into the fire with his fiscal stimulus at basically full employment and an economy doing pretty well. Of course, this had an impact, but it was pretty costly. But from my point of view, recession clouds are getting darker and darker. We're seeing it in the yield curve. We've just seen the Empire State Manufacturing. Yep. We're seeing that most of the numbers are coming in weaker. And it's not only the US, it's a global slowdown. Yes. I like to follow the numbers from South Korea because they are very, very sensitive, and they are, of course, very, very tech-driven, very, very, very export-driven. And if you have a look at the Korean stock market and the economic numbers coming out of South Korea, it's frightening. In Europe, we've got many countries in or in the verge on the verge of a recession. So from my point of view, it is pretty obvious that we're in a massive slowdown, and that central banks will react, of course. But the leeway, for example, in the Eurozone is significantly smaller than in the United States. So on a relative basis, from my point of view, the Federal Reserve did a much better job than the ECB.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see why you would say that. But in the grand scheme of things, we're all in the same boat and we're all headed the same direction. And that's just kind of getting laid bare for all to see. And Ronnie, I'm sure you'd agree with this. I mean, our job is to be forward thinking, right? And anticipate and act, not just simply react. And the textbook definition of recession is two consecutive quarters of economic contraction. Well, here in the U.S., even though, you know, we're clearly slowing, the second quarter is going to print at 1 to 1.5%. So positive. So really, even once we turn negative in the third quarter, we won't get official pronouncement of recession until the first fourth quarter estimates are in. And that won't be till freaking February, Ronnie. So
yeah. Yeah.
We've really got to, I mean, we're trying to look over the horizon as far as we can.
Well, actually, in this year's report, we had a lengthy study about the performance of gold before and during recession. So basically, we splitted the recession up into four cycles: the run-up phase, the official recession, and before the unofficial recession, and then the last quarter of a recession. And I mean, the result is pretty clear that gold is an excellent recession hedge. And the interesting thing is, I think that many people don't really know that, because there is no internationally standardized definition of the term recession. In the US, it is two subsequent quarters. It is a technical recession in the euro area, while, in the US, recessions are determined pretty differently. So according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, an economy is in a recession if a significant decline in economic activity has seized the majority of the economy and lasts for several months. And indicators are, among others, trends in GDP, real income, employment, industrial production. But the thing is, the recession is usually only diagnosed once the economy is already past the worst. And we found out that actually the stock market is a pretty good forecaster of recessions, or discounts recessions pretty efficiently. The yield curve is very reliable. And from my point of view, gold also discounts recessions pretty efficiently. And therefore, saying that the US is already in a pre-recession phase or might be in an official recession in the next couple of quarters, that's, for me, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, a recession is nothing that one should be scared of. It's just a normal part of the cycle. Actually, it's something healthy, because it's just a reallocation of resources, where prudent businessmen that are well financed, that are well structured, they just take over resources, factories, human resources, technology, whatever, from companies that are not that well financed, yeah, and that cannot go through the recession. Yeah. So it is, for a longer term, it is healthy, but we all know that a recession is, of course, the last thing that a politician wants, because it doesn't really increase the odds of a re-election. So from my point of view, Donald Trump will do everything he can to keep the S&P up, to not fall into a recession, just to get re-elected.
And Ronnie, one last thing before we get to the miners, I actually pulled a chart out of the report where you showed the seasonality of gold prices in the year running up, year before a U.S. election. You remember that chart?
Yeah.
That looked like maybe we should start looking for better things in the second half of the year. It'll be on this page so everybody can see what we're talking about. But I thought that was an interesting chart too.
Yeah, well, I mean, seasonality is something different, but I wouldn't make decisions just because of seasonality. I think that, you know, in pre-election years, normally we're seeing the lows between end of June, and then there's a slight move, and then a slightly higher low at the end of July, beginning of August, and then a really strong move up until November. So that's the seasonality of gold in pre-election years. As I've said, I mean, it is one part of the puzzle, but definitely not decisive. What's more important for me is the fact that when I talk to institutional investors, they are all waiting on the sidelines at the moment. Mm-hmm. There was a big warning shot in the fourth quarter. And then, of course, there was the big relief because the stock market was soaring again in January. But gold reappeared on the watch list for many generalist investors, and I think they will join. They will join the field, and will start investing once we're above that 1360, 1380.
Yeah, well, and Ronnie, that leads to our last question in our final minutes here, because I wanted to ask you about the shares and what they may be telling us as well. Because you mentioned the creative destruction of a recession. You've got a section of your report about the creative destruction leading to a bull market in the shares too, for these companies that, you know, made it through the dismal winter that we've had to endure for the last 5 or 6 years and are still there. They could profit pretty quickly. I want to ask you about this idea. And so this is kind of like a long question. But Eric, I do this thing with Eric Sprott every week, and he mentioned something to me a couple weeks ago about how the big miners usually lead the way in a new bull market, simply because, and this is an oversimplification, but if you were making, you know, a dollar a share at $12.50 gold, you might make $2 a share at $13.50 gold. They're that highly leveraged.
Yeah.
And where else are you going to find a company whose earnings per share are going to double that quickly in this environment? And now we're seeing that play out. The HUI index is making new highs for the year almost every day, the GDX as well. Is that telling us the sector as a whole is anticipating higher prices, not just the rally that has already happened, expecting higher prices even from here? And do you think that that concept kind of holds water with those institutional guys you're talking about that begin finally to look at the sector and go, well, I'm not going to get a double of earnings out of, you know, Apple or, you know, Google or something like that. Maybe I ought to take a little bit of money out of those and go bargain hunting in the mining sector. And then you know what could happen after that. What do you think of that kind of that broad question?
I agree, and I mean we are already in an earnings recession in the S&P, and I think, you know, I just did a panel discussion quite recently, and I would say that most of the investors couldn't care less about gold and mining stocks. And I said, you know, I really like South African mining stocks at the moment, and there was laughter. It was like, I don't know, saying in 2016 that Donald Trump will become U.S. president, or
exactly.
or earlier. No, but actually, it seems that through the whole bear market, we have seen that many companies really they cleaned their balance sheets, they got leaner, they got their costs under control, they refocused. Of course, energy prices were coming down, so I sense that the leverage on rising gold price is higher than ever. I have got no doubt that many companies will make the same mistakes in an environment of a rising gold price. But I think that most of the M&A deals that we have seen in the last couple of months were really taken very positively by the market and by analysts because they make sense. And normally those big mergers, they happen at the end of a bear market or the end of a bull market. Now, having a look at the chart of the gold bucks index, I don't think that we're at the end of a bull market. So from my point of view, mining stocks and perhaps even silver mining stocks are probably the most contrarian investment that you can make at the moment. And of course, they will need higher gold prices. But you know, at 1500, I think that there will be a big rush into the mining space. It seems that the sector really learned its lesson. And from my point of view, it's really great to see and to analyze how much changed in the industry, and therefore, you know, I'm quoting Viktor Frankl, an Austrian, and he said, "If life has any meaning at all, then suffering must also have meaning." And it seems that all the suffering in the sector and the market is a pain maximizer, as I often say. It led to some really good outcomes, and we can probably harvest from the last couple of years in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's very well stated, my friend. And again, I just want to remind everyone, take time to not only read the compact version, but go through the whole thing. Just go to In Gold We Trust, the website, that link's on this page. You can download the whole thing. And what is it, 300 some odd pages or something, isn't it, Ronnie?
Yeah, 340 pages.
Goodness.
So we hit at a new all-time high. But honestly, it's really, we put in so much love, work, capital, devotion into this report, and I think it is really, really interesting. We've got great chapters about the standard chapters about the status quo of the gold market, about the portfolio characteristics, but we also got, for example, a chapter about FOFOA free gold. I mean, this reads like a mixture of I don't know, John Grisham movie,
yeah,
and or John Grisham book and Indiana Jones movie. It's really fascinating, even for people that know quite a lot in the gold space. Then we've got a contribution by Steve Hanke about hyperinflation. We're talking about technology and how it changes the mining space. We've got a big chapter of the Chinese gold gold demand and in general about China and how they think about how differently they think about investing, because this year is the very first report that we also published a report not only in German and in English but also in Chinese, so there's a Mandarin translation. So I think it's really an interesting report, and people should take some time and study the report, and I hope that you'll all enjoy it and we'll get lots of new information, or perhaps we can even put a smile on your face, because there's some nice cartoons, some really fun quotes by, I don't know, we are quoting Steve Drabin, for example, John Drabin, you remember him?
I know Frank Drabin.
Frank Drabin, sorry, Frank Drabin. He said, "Truth hurts, maybe not as much as jumping on a bicycle with the seat missing. It hurts."
the Naked Gun and the Police Squad stuff is some of my favorite. I mean, there's just classic stuff in there. And Ronnie, lastly, TF Metals reported, I mean, it's a global phenomenon, my friend. We have readers and listeners from all around the planet. So, I mean, tell everybody a little bit about Incrementum, just so they know if they want to work with you guys, how they can contact you, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Well, just visit our webpage, incrementum.li. We are basically doing fund management, managing at the moment 5 funds, soon 7 funds, mostly in the commodity space, precious metals, but we also got a crypto fund coming up. Then we're doing research. We're writing the annual In Gold We Trust report, as well as the quarterly crypto research report. And then we're doing wealth management for high net worth individuals. We're also publishing quite a lot. Besides that, we just published a book called Die Nullzinsfalle in German. It's going to be the zero interest rate trap for the English translation, probably gonna be published in fall 2019. So there is quite a lot of content from our side, and we also got fantastic products to invest.
Yep.
That's basically it.
Yeah, please everybody check out the Incrementum site for more details. And Ronnie, I do think why don't we try to get back together sometime in the fourth quarter, maybe, and see where we stand. I'd love to hear more about that zero interest rate trap that you're talking about. I've said the negative interest rates are the greatest fundamental rationale for owning physical gold that mankind has ever created. And that's where we're headed. And so that might be a good thing to talk about as well. So let's try to get caught up again relatively soon. But for now, Ronnie, thank you so much, man. I on behalf of everybody around the planet, if I can take that mantle for a second, that's interested in precious metals. Thank you. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to your whole team. It's just great stuff. And I'm sure you're already hard at work at next year's report. So thanks in advance for that one, too.
Yeah. I mean, after the report is before the report. So I'm already collecting ideas for the 2020 edition. But thank you very much for your kind words, and thank you for doing such a tremendous job for the industry as well. And I hope that you and your listeners enjoyed it. I did so very much. And of course, let's have a chat in the fourth quarter at the latest.
Yeah. Okay. You got it. All right. Well, thank you, my friend. And thanks, everybody, for listening. And please, by all means, scroll through this report. Download the big, gigantic one as well, and have a read. And then let's just see where we go the rest of the year. It's going to be an exciting year. Thank you, Ronnie, so much.
Thank you very much. Have a good one. All the best.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.